With over 2 weeks until the next FPL deadline, we take stock of the positions ahead of the run-in, discuss the best time to play our remaining chips, and Sam and Jules disagree, shock, over when I should play my wild card. I'm going to start this podcast nice and upbeat because I listened back to last week's podcast and I was grumpy at the beginning and I shouldn't have been. I'm sorry, I'm never grumpy. It's an international break. I'm actually on holiday, which is quite nice. And I had an okay FPL week and there's loads for us to talk about as we prepare for the season run-in. So myself, Kelly Summers, Sam Bonfield, Julian Laron, back with me. Sam, are you in a good mood or not? Please, can we just get out of the way where you're going today? Because I just want the listeners to know.
I'm going to a Spurs Legends lunch today, which I had as part of my Christmas present. And I can't decide whether I'm like super excited about it because like you said before, Cal's, just before we started recording, it's a nice opportunity to think about the good old days at Spurs when, you know, things went positively. Or whether it's going to just be one of those moments where a load of Spurs fans complaining and moaning and asking questions about relegation. So we'll find out later. We'll see how good mood I'm in after lunch.
The problem is as well, it's just given Jules so much ammunition to laugh at you when you said straight away and I was like, I'm going to a Spurs Legends. Yeah. But anyway, I hope you enjoy it.
Playing.
Ha ha.
Yeah, maybe you could sign
yes,
them up.
Yes, I wish
Sam.
They were, to be fair.
You wish they
bring
were.
Back Gary Mabbutt.
which Legends is it? This is real digress. We're going to get in trouble for this.
Yeah. It's Gary Mabbutt, Pat Jennings and Steve Perryman. So proper Spurs legends.
Producer Jesse is regretting the decision to never edit anything out from this podcast now. okay, let's talk about FPL because we're not just here to talk about Sam's week and my week and George's week, of course, as well, because there is still so much to play for in FPL. And I always find this international break either pumps me up or gets me a little bit nervous. I'd probably say the latter this season because it's the last time you're kind of going to have a little bit of time to think about your FPL teams. And it's even longer actually because we've got the FA Cup weekend after the international break. So this one feels incredibly pivotal and it can kind of define your season depending on how you play it. Let's just check in with how we did last week though and how we're looking going into the final run-in, as we'll call it. Myself and Jules both bought in Gordon, which was good. And Jules, you also bought in Cunha, but I'd probably say your other transfer didn't go so well.
Yeah, Kelly, it was a really good week, 74 points. I was super happy. Cunha returned, Tarkowski cash, defensively were good. Gordon, as you said, 10 points. If you captain Bruno like us, that was the right captain too. And then I brought Malik Cho. I was just convinced he would start for Newcastle and I was gutted when he was on the bench. Then he came on the 54th minute. He scored a goal and I was listening when we were at Wembley for the League Cup final and then the goal to be disallowed as well, and I was gutted. But still, 74 points, it would have been better with if Cho had started, for example, or if his goal had gone on. But still very happy. It meant, guys, that one of my mini leagues, the world famous Beefy Billions League, there's a lot of us in there, our friend Carl Kramer organizing it, I won that for this month. And because we've got winners for every month and you know, at the end of the season as well. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Oscar Rafter and his dad, Glenn, because they're also part of that. They love the show. They listen to the show every week. So good luck. Keep going, Oscar, because I know you're having a frustrating season, but like all of us, really.
George, your season isn't that frustrating. I'm heavily invested in where you finish now because I'm a bit worried about where I'm going to finish.
Thank you.
You're now 138,174th in the world. I mean, if you keep having weeks like you're having, top 50K, what are you aiming for?
I hope so.
There's
not that many game week to go, isn't it? But strong finishes, we always say that's when, you know, you can go and win your mini leagues. You can finish as high as possible. Remember the 2 years ago when I had that really good year? Mm-hmm. Mateta at the end of the season really got me there, almost on his own. So just the right player right now for the next 7 weeks or so, or a bit more, and you'll be good.
Yeah, so I got 67 points, which I was pretty happy with. It was a bit of a green arrow up to around 700,000K. So I reckon I can potentially sneak into that top 500, which is
pretty
poor for me. But yeah, I looked back through my game week history and then I went and made the mistake of looking through. And it's quite depressing when you do this, isn't it? When you look through your season history, Sam, and you remember kind of like a few years ago, I was like every year I was finishing like climbing up and then I went from like inside the 100K and I was gradually going down to 40K. Now I'm going to be happy if I finish inside top 500. So yeah, it's been a frustrating season for everyone though, hasn't it? And Sam, you didn't have the best week when it came to transfers, but you did have a green arrow and so you're still climbing upwards.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this week for me just felt like it was going to be difficult. And I said to Lee going into it, I was like, if I can just survive this with barely a green arrow, I'll be delighted, which is what happened in the end, because I was really conscious that I didn't have all of the players that everyone else was going for. Like, I didn't have Harry Wilson and I didn't really have a route to him because I didn't want to sell Semenyo, and I didn't have Gordon and I didn't have a route to him. And all of the players that I kind of looked at and thought, well, I could get them this week, I just couldn't find a way to bring them into my team without destroying it moving forward into the second part of the season. And because I don't have my wild card left, I have to be really mindful of what my team's going to look like going into 32 and then beyond. So I kind of went a little bit rogue. I was really worried about not having João Pedro. In my head, I was like, this could be problematic because if he goes off, that's definitely going to be a red arrow. So I covered him out, which... do I regret it now? Maybe. But the thing is, if I hadn't have gone with him, I'd have gone Jared Bowen, who also didn't do anything. So it wouldn't have made any difference anyway. I took a punt on Richarlison and Spurs did Spursy things. So it is what it is. But it was a green arrow, and that is the most important thing. So heading into the next part of the season now, at least I look at my team and I think it's still set up quite nicely. Whether Richarlison stays or not, well, that remains to be seen. But at least I didn't use all my transfers. I still have three going into the next week, and my team still feels like it's in decent shape to get me through what is going to be the most challenging part of the season with the blanks and doubles coming.
Yeah, I know a lot of people last week that were like, let's just get through this game week.
Yeah, and survive.
Yeah, exactly that. And you did. So onwards and upwards. In terms of the FPL Pod Mini League, no change. Henry, Pedro Moschini and Kim all held their places in first, second and third. Henry got 58 this week. Pedro 67. And actually that meant the gap between first and second closed to just 2 points. So it's really hotting up there. Pedro's 18 points ahead of Kim, who got 56 points. Oliver Tarby climbed back up into fourth spot this week with 64 points. He's now just 2 points behind Kim. Okay, then I'm not going to read the code because we're now officially at the point of the season. I think we'll be a bit annoyed if I do. A big conundrum I've got this week, guys, is should I play my wild card? Because of course I've held on to it as I always do. I'm the only one on this podcast that has. But I feel like, Sam, there's 2 points at which people are looking at playing this wild card now. I'd always had in my head that I was going to play it this week. I love ruining my holidays with wild cards. So I thought I'm going to play ahead of game week 32, but I haven't played it yet because I'm waiting to see what happens in the FA Cup. And I feel like there's also another good point that you could play in 35 if you don't want to play it now. What do you think?
I would wait for 35.
That's what I'm leaning to.
I would play now.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Why?
You still have your bench boost. You still have your bench boost.
Yeah, but that's my least favourite chip, Jules.
It doesn't matter. I think you play your wild card now, you get your team ready for 33 and you bench boost in 33 and you will smash it. Absolutely smash it. I think for me, the key... if you still have both wildcard and bench boost, it makes so much sense. Play your wildcard in 32, so you prepare your team, not just your team, your whole squad for 33, because we also, I mean, we will know who doubles in 33, and then you can have a hell of a team and a hell of a squad for 33 with your bench boost, and that's where you're going to smash it and get over 100 points and thing. And I think for me, if you have still have both, the key is the bench boost for me. If you don't have the bench boost anymore because you've played already, I don't know when, but before, then I agree with Sam, wait and play your wild card later, maybe, especially if your team looks decent now. If you still have both, for me, it makes a lot of sense. You play your wild card, you have a very, very strong game week 32 that is ready for bench boosting in 33. So that's two strong game week in a row. And then you can even play your free hit when there's a blank coming up.
It does make a lot of sense. Sam, over to you now to fight your corner.
I just think that for me, the bench boost chip can go anywhere. Like, you can play a bench boost in a single week. We've seen over the last few seasons that actually often in a double game week, it's not the players that you have on the bench that necessarily do particularly well. Like we had it earlier on in the season, like when I played my original bench boost, everyone played it in a single game week because we didn't have any doubles at that point. When I look at the way the rest of this season pans out, the way that European competitions have gone for the English clubs, the way that the FA Cup draw has gone, I think it's very possible that the doubles that we have coming might be quite small. Like, some of the fixtures may move into 33, as Jules said. Some of them may go into 35 or 36. So if they spread them out across those weeks, then there's the potential that we only maybe have one or two teams, well, obviously two because there'd be one match, but one match or two teams doubling in each of those weeks. So you have to be mindful of that. I think you also have to be mindful of what does your team look like coming out? Because obviously if there's a double, there's also a blank. Mm. So the teams that double in 33, for example, would then blank in 34. So you have to be able to plan your team so that it can get you through those 2 weeks. Now, it might be that you're happy to go wildcard bench boost free hit, but then where does your triple captain go if you still have that left as well? Because managers will have that left, and the triple captain in a double game week feels a lot more valuable than a bench boost in a double game week. And I do think that moving into those final few weeks of the season at game week 35, you will know exactly where we stand by that point. We'll know exactly where all the games have fitted, and we'll know exactly what that final run-in looks like. And for me, by wildcarding into 35, that gives you an opportunity to go 35, 36, 37 and 38 as a really big hit, because you're focusing purely on the teams with something to fight for and the teams with great fixtures.
That's my thinking at the moment, being honest.
So in my mind, I think that makes a lot of sense, because you can still make, between now and game week, whichever game week it is, 33, 36, whenever you decide you want to play that bench boost, you can use your transfers to secure your bench. Your bench is fully playing anyway, so it's not like you've got, you know, people that you don't want in there or aren't going to feature at all. I mean,
there's a few that I'd rather not have.
Maybe that you don't want, but you're not going to have ones in there that are blanking entirely or not featuring.
I'd like at this point to give a shout out to Michael Keane, because I absolutely would not have started him last weekend, being completely honest. And that's where sometimes you do get a bit lucky with FPL, but I had to play him because, of course, I only had 11 players. Or I had Mukiele, but of course, he didn't play and I wasn't sure if he was going to play. So I had to play him. And actually, what did he got? I think he got me 8 points, didn't he? So yeah, like, there's a few on my bench. He would be someone that I'd get rid of on a wild card. Now I'm like, oh, can he stay a bit longer? So yeah, I just wanted to give him a shout out, because I've had bad luck with him this season, but he's still paid me.
I think the other thing looking at when to wild card is that you're doing the right thing by waiting until after the FA Cup, because after the FA Cup plays out, obviously we've also got European football that week as well. So we'll start to get some clarity on which teams are going to progress in Europe, who's progressed in the FA Cup, what that means for game week 34, whether the fixtures can stay in 34 and just shift into the midweek that follows, whether they need to be rescheduled. But we won't exactly know by the deadline when those fixtures are going to be rescheduled for. And so for me, that's why I just think that 35 is a really nice opportunity to dead end into the blank and then free hit in the double. Because free hitting in a double is great, right? It gives you the opportunity to really hone in on just the doubling players for that starting 11. And I like the idea of being more aggressive with the free hit this season, because I think that's the biggest opportunity to really make gains. I think that's a bigger opportunity than a bench boost in a double for me.
Yeah. So why I'm leaning towards, but George, you make a really interesting point, and I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think there's just two ways you can go at it from. It kind of just depends. Mm. It depends on how you feel about 33 as well, I think. But I think probably the answer as well, though, is to just wait until the FA Cup. It's a really strange season, actually, isn't it? It's felt quite stop and start in terms of we had a blank, then we had, it was blank last week, wasn't it? I've lost the week. Yeah, we had the teams that blanked, then we've had the international break, and then we've had the FA Cup. So it's felt like a really weird time. So when we get back going on that second weekend of April, it feels like it's like full steam ahead. So yeah, by then I'll have made a decision, hopefully. Okay. So hopefully that helps you a little bit. Sam, you did mention it then actually about the triple captain, because I think we're all sometimes guilty of just thinking about our own teams, aren't we? In terms of, Jules, if you had every chip left, what would your plan be?
Yeah, so I like the idea of the wild card in 32, like I said, and then bench boosting 33. If the fixtures, like we said, after the FA Cup and Europa are right, I also think if you play your wild card in 32, that gives you roll on your transfers, and then you still have five free transfers to get into, let's say, 37, 38.
Some of us don't have five, but yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? To finish strongly, it's a mini wild card too with five free transfers in a way. You can swap half of your team if you want for 37, 38 and target the team that still have something to play for. Whereas if you wildcard in 35 and you got it wrong for whatever reason, or you got two players injured, something like that, then you'll be more in a difficult situation if you haven't had like banked in your transfers before. So I think it's good like that. So I probably would do that. The triple captain, we like to play in double game week. We played it on Gabriel double game week. That wasn't great because he got 3 and 4. And in the end, okay, that looked good at 21, but it was actually not that great. It should have been much better than that. But you will have maybe another double, maybe later in 36, for example, where you can play it. You can play on somebody there. But yeah, I agree. It's maybe not ideal to have kept that triple captain for so long.
Yeah, but equally, I'm not blooming wish I'd kept mine now, given what what happened when we did it, but we did it, didn't we? Anyway, let's move on to a season review, because there's actually only 8 game weeks of the campaign remaining. So because we've got this little bit of a break and we've got a couple more pods to come before the next deadline, it gives us a bit of time to breathe and kind of take stock. What would you say, like personally, Sam, your highlights, your lowlights? Yeah, just your highlights and lowlights, really. Don't spend too long on the lowlights. I know you're going to be like me and guilty.
But scoot over them.
I mean, not much on the highlights either, to be fair.
Wow. Let's start with the positives then. So I think generally speaking, chip strategy has been really good this year. My best weeks have come when I've had a chip active. And that should be the case, obviously. But I think, you know, the bench boost that week when Mickey was brilliant and Spurs beat Everton, that was definitely a highlight. The wild cards, both wild card windows have gone really well. Like, my season changed with my second wild card, and I think that's been really important, and it does show you how important the chip strategy could be, which is why that whole conversation about how you've got easily 2 different chip strategies that you could follow in the second part of the season if you still have a wild card left, it shows how that can make or break how the season goes. Because that decision that I made to wildcard much, much earlier than everybody else, like, that has been massively changing the way that my season has panned out. So that's been a really good thing. Not so great things. I mean, to be fair, there's not that many. I think the captaincy, I very rarely this season have picked my highest scoring player as the captain. And that's been a real frustration, because I think when you get the captaincy right, it makes such a difference to the way that your game week pans out. On the game weeks that I tried to go against Haaland earlier on with Saka or others, it just didn't go well. And then obviously towards the second part of the season, it was like, well, leaving the captaincy with Haaland for too long was problematic. So that, I guess that's one. And then obviously just goalkeepers generally. Bought in Pope, he gets injured, had to play Dubravka. Bought in Roofs, he got injured, have to play Dubravka. Spent most of the season playing Dubravka, it feels like. Had Raya at that point where Arsenal weren't keeping clean sheets, got rid of him, now they're keeping clean sheets. It's just, yeah, goalkeepers. They're not my friend.
Jules, what about you?
So for the good, there's a few good things. João Pedro, for example, I think I brought him at the right time. When I brought Bruno Guimarães, he had a really good run in, to be fair, too. I waited a little bit too long, I think, on Gabriel, bringing Gabriel in the team. I had Timber for a long time just because he was a bit cheaper, and I missed, I think, a lot of the points from Gabriel. The second wild card, a bit like Sam, worked really well. I got 77 points on that game week 24. And after that, my team looked much better. The 2 triple captain, disastrous. Haaland against Leeds at home, I think a few of us did that. And that he got us 2 points. And then, as I mentioned before, Gabriel in that Arsenal double game week with Brentford and Wolves. And that didn't work either. On the bad things, the really bad things, I'd forgotten a lot of it, to be fair. I started the season with Florian Wirtz. Don't ask me why.
We all did that.
I know, but I even had Ollie Watkins, like, who didn't even look that great at the start of the season, but I kept him for a long time. But really, my worst was all the points I left on the bench through the whole season. I looked back again yesterday to prepare for the show, and there's a lot of weeks where there's 12 points on the bench, 13, 15, 20, 21. Remember when I had that week with 21 points on the bench? I even left Declan Rice on the bench for the game against Bournemouth when he got 17 points on his own. On my bench. So,
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
You know, but Sam said that's the beauty of the game in a way, because you pick your team from your squad for the best. You're not leaving points on the bench, you know, on purpose. And sometimes it doesn't go your way. It's a bit like the captaincy, really. But when you get the bench and the captaincy right, then obviously it's a very different story.
Yeah, I think for me, as always, it's leaving my chips a bit too late. But my chips, basically just rinse and repeat from the last few years, put it in. But when I look back, actually, like, my triple captain, unlike Jules, I did Erling Haaland at home to West Ham, and he got me 48 points. You did the same,
amazing.
Didn't you, Sam?
Yeah.
Like, that made, for once, I went with the sensible, obvious option, and it paid off, which sometimes I'm guilty of not doing. A few weeks ago, probably about 6 weeks ago now, where I was standing at Milton Keynes Central train station, realised that I hadn't had signal on the train, had to rush off, bring in a transfer, and it was for double game week, and the only thing I did was bring in James Hill, and I thought it was the most boring transfer ever, and he was a real, other than last game week, obviously, when he got minus points, he was a real revelation. And also Harry Wilson has been a high point. I got on him pretty early, and I've benefited from him. So a couple of nice budget players I've done well with. I probably regret keeping hold of Erling Haaland as long as I have. But I think that sums me up as an FPL manager. Jules, I thought you might have sold him because you're normally a bit bolder, whereas I play this game with too much fear. So I'm not surprised in myself. But more than ever this season, when I've been having a bad campaign, I've been looking at it going, why am I not selling him? He's not passing the eye test. He's not getting the numbers. City, I mean, they were really good on Sunday, but City aren't functioning as we've seen them in the past. Why am I not selling? So I'm just a bit annoyed that more than ever I was close to doing it and I didn't. But yeah, there's been a lot more low points than that. But let's just gloss over those and let's focus on James Hill and Harry Wilson, shall we? Actually, didn't I bring him? I brought in Michael Keane and then he didn't play and then he got my... Do you remember that game when he scored and then did he get sent off? Oh, he did something wild, like he scored and got sent off.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yes, he did, because then he was banned as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, so I bought him, what game? Oh, it's not going to make great audio if I trawl back through now and remember, but if you've got Michael Keane, you don't want to remember that, so let's just move on. Or if you had him then, at least. So that's, I think, why I enjoyed his 8 points last week quite so much. Okay, then, let's just talk about overall. I think the reason it's been such a difficult season, George, is because the premiums have been so tricky. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about it through the whole season, really, and when to bring some or should we bring some? Who do we keep? Who we don't keep? Because usually one of the big headaches we have playing the game is like, where do you spend the money? Because you can't have all of Saka, Palmer, Haaland, Salah and Bruno, for example. And it's sometimes quite hard to make the call of who you get in, the two or the three that you want. And this season actually was much easier because they haven't really performed that well. Okay, Bruno now is in the great run and I think has a shot of player of the season. But at the start of the season when he was playing deeper under Ruben Amorim, that was not the case at all. And he had really low ownership because he was playing as a number six and not having the influence that we see him having now as a number 10, really. Haaland, great first half of the season, as always, is still the player with the most points in the game, 197, I think. Sam, I might be wrong, but I think. But in the last few weeks, like you said, Kels, maybe we should have sold him because he hasn't been that great, had that really poor run of scoring, really. And I just think that was tricky. If players like that start not performing, I mean, Bukayo Saka is 20th in terms of points, you know, in his position. Cole Palmer is even lower. He doesn't even have 100 points, Cole Palmer, so far this season. So I think it's been, in a way, difficult because premiums have not performed, but easy because we didn't have the headache of who do we pick because a lot of them were not very good anyway.
And I think there's also, like I said before with Haaland, there's a bit of a fear. Like, we feel like we need them, Sam, because we're like, well, they're expensive for a reason because they're going to give us points. And maybe that has sometimes tricked us into holding them longer than we should.
Absolutely. And I think there's something really weirdly uncomfortable about having loads of money in your fantasy bank. Like, I look at my team at the minute when I log in and there's 7 million in the bank. And I look at it and I'm like, what's, I sold Haaland, didn't I? So I look at it and I'm like, what? Normally in a season, I'm like scrambling around going, where can I find 0.1, 0.2 to buy this player that I really feel like I need to have? This season, I can't remember doing that at all. It's been just a constant case of, well, I've got the money, I'll just get that player. And sometimes that's been a real struggle. Like when Jules and I on Wildcard both bought Senesi and actually ended up being James Hill. Now, over recent weeks, Senesi's actually been a better own, but it's taken some patience to get there because we could have saved nearly a million at that point buying Hill over buying Senesi. But you have this like, well, they're reassuringly expensive because I've got to spend this level of budget on them. I feel like they owe me big returns. And it's the same with the premiums. Like, you look at them and you go, normally I'm like putting these pairs in. And I think if you look historically over the last few seasons, like we've Salah last year, phenomenal. In the seasons before, Spurs sold Kane, just unreal. And you had to own him because every week it was like almost guaranteed points. Same with Son, same with Cole Palmer over the last couple of seasons. But this year it's been really different. And I think it's taken quite a long time for managers to start readjusting their mindset, particularly managers that have played it for years and years and years, because you kind of just go, well, look, I want to buy a Chelsea player and I'll look at Cole Palmer, whereas actually the answer has been to look at João Pedro. So it's those moments, I think, that have just taken a little bit of a readjustment for managers. And for the ones that are doing really well in the game, I think they've readjusted quicker than the rest of us. Like, I know for me, like you, Kels, I've just held these players for too long, or I've automatically looked at the more expensive ones because I've had the budget to spend on them. And that hasn't really been the right strategy so far.
And the thing Kel, is that then it leaves you with a lot of money. And in a way, that brings another headache because when you spend a lot on the premiums, then the rest of your budget is quite tight. So you go for them and you're happy. But if you have 5, 6, 7 million in the bank, you have so many more options for the other players now. And you think, okay, should I go for him or him or him? And then suddenly you're like, oh my God, I need to make the right call here. And in a way, it's nice to have that money and to be able to have different options. But he also, in a way, makes it a little bit more challenging, I think.
Jules, that's why your bench has been what
it's been.
Exactly,
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Why you've benched so many points this season, because you've been able to spread the budget, which means you've got a 15-man squad, as opposed to just a rubbish bench that you're just going to leave there every week.
Yeah,
why
so
some
true.
Weeks you've had to bench Declan Rice. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, completely, yeah.
Okay, let's spend a few minutes on each position just to see where we're at and who the best picks have been and maybe who we'd like to be considering for the run-in as well. So let's start with goalkeepers. Best picks this season. Well, I mean, it would have been Roofs, wouldn't it, really, before his injury, Sam?
Still is, surely.
But, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, he's on 110 points. Rea is obviously the top scoring goalkeeper this season. He's on 129. Pickford's close behind, 126. That's low-key. That's kind of gone under my radar a little bit with Pickford. Like, I was quite surprised to see him sit in second. Same with Henderson in third, 115 points. I think Kelleher is up there for shout of goalkeeper of the season. He's had moments of brilliance. Three penalty saves for him this season. That's unreal. We've got three goalkeepers with assists this season in Sanchez, Pope and Areola. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think when I look at the season as a whole, would I say that Rea has been the best goalkeeper, despite the fact he's on the most points? Probably not. Because if I was going to invest in the Arsenal defence, I definitely think that the defenders have been a better pick. And despite the fact that, you know, Burnley haven't kept clean sheets, I do think Dubravka deserves a shout out. He's got the most save points this season with 27. Like, as a second goalkeeper, the fact that he's been that cheap and has been so, in a normal season, he would have been an absolute gift, wouldn't he? Because he would have enabled us to buy all these premium assets. But because we haven't necessarily needed the premiums. So yeah, I think I'm frustrated with Roos because obviously I've bought him in and then he's got injured again, but hopefully he'll be back for the run-in and I can just hold him and that'll be okay. But goalkeepers are my nemesis. So.
I wonder if the way we view Rea is quite different, because I wouldn't have even looked at him in previous seasons because of the whole budget thing. I don't like spending that much on a keeper, but because we've had that extra bit of budget, it's enabled us to go, oh, maybe Rea is a better option this season, Jules.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that he's owned by still 35% of the manager for a goalkeeper, that's a lot of owners, you know? And that for that, but if you look at it, and Sam is right, Pickford with 126 points, so just three behind Rea, in terms of value for money, Pickford is a much, much better own than Rea, really, because you're still saving a lot of money. Roofs and Kelleher, for me, are also, like Sam just said, outstanding. And they are 4.8 million now, but obviously they had price rises. But for where they started and the amount of points that they are, fourth and fifth best goalkeeper in the game at this moment in time, in terms of points, is really outstanding.
Okay, on to defenders then. The best ones this season, and I mean, I feel like the way we've looked at defenders has kind of been ripped up and torn into pieces and thrown in the bin, really, Jules, with the introduction of DEFCON, because in the past we were all cramming our defences, weren't we, with fullbacks, and this year we're all desperate for blocks, tackles and centre-backs.
And we count them now.
And we even count them, as we see them on television or in the stadium even, you know. I mean, obviously, Gabriel is not just the number one in terms of points, and with 173, which is a lot for a defender, obviously. He has had so far this season 25 bonus points. The second defender with the most bonus points is Mateus Nunes, who's obviously not really a defender, but he counts, you know, with 16. And then it's Malik Chou with 12. So this is how much more Gabriel has been like dominant in terms of bonus points for his Arsenal team. 25 to the next one at 16 and then 12. It's incredible when you think about it. I think the second defender in the game, which is maybe Virgil, or Virgil is third. Those guys are on 9 bonus points, 8 bonus points. Gabriel has 25. It's just ridiculous.
it is ridiculous. I mean, the Arsenal defence have been the way to go, haven't they, Sam? And we've needed a double up for the majority of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty standard. Like, over the last couple of years, owning an Arsenal defender has been the way to go.
Yeah.
And in order to make them actually benefit you, owning two of them has been the way to go, which is why I think Rea has been such a popular pick recently, because obviously people knew that the double was coming, the blank was coming, rather. And it was easy for manages to bench him and just play Dubravka for a week and then keep him in the double up of the Arsenal defence for the next few weeks. Yeah, I mean, Gabriel has just been absolutely phenomenal. And I think picking a secondary Arsenal defender has been more challenging this season because we've had injuries to Timber and Saliba. It means that they haven't necessarily played as much as we would have wanted, or they haven't been that kind of outstandingness. And like you said at the beginning of this, Kels, because of defensive contributions, with the exception of Gabriel, who's just in a league of his own, the others are kind of, they don't look as great in comparison to, say, players like Tarkowski or Senesi, who just every week feel like they're just going to get you four, like, because they're always picking up those additional points. So the counting of additional points, I think, has been really important for defenders this year, whether that be their ability to get a bonus point with Gabriel or an attacking return also with Gabriel or some of the others, but also with the defensive contributions as well. So yeah, just to kind of put another lie on Gabriel, he's also the defender with the most double digit hauls this season. He's had five at his level with Mateus Nunes at Manchester City, by the way, which I was kind of interested when I saw that, because when I think about City defenders, Nunes is not the one that I automatically think about. But I think probably that's because in recent weeks O'Reilly has just been unreal.
And Gabriel missed 6 weeks of the season through injury as well,
point.
In November, December. So imagine where he would be at now if he had played every single game.
It's like I said last week, he's going to be, if he carries on like this, the highest ever scoring defender in the game, and he didn't play for 6 weeks.
It's wild, isn't it? Imagine what he could have got if he was fit. I also think it's maybe changed the way we think about doubling up on defences in general. Because like you said, Sam, you know that, like, for example, if you had a Hill and Senesi, for example, even if, I know loads of people don't have that, but you've probably got two players there who are going to get DEFCON, or that there's so much more value. You, like the likes of James Hill, like, I know I've mentioned him already, but he provides exceptional value. In past season, we wouldn't have looked at a 3.94 million starting player like him, would we? Like, I don't know, it just feels like it's changed the whole way we think.
Yeah, and I think when you look back on the early part of the season, I think we spoke in pre-season this year about how maybe we need to change our thinking. Maybe we need to be looking at the centre-back. So when we were looking at the newly promoted clubs, we were talking about, oh, do we get their full-backs? Like, because that's been traditionally how we've done it. Like, think back to previous seasons with players like Leif Davis. You've gone for the ones that are more likely to get the attacking returns. Whereas this time around, it's been different because we've been like, well, who's more likely to make the clearances, the blocks, the interceptions? Well, it's probably the centre-backs. And if it's the centre-backs, then when we're looking for our cheap budget enablers, then the centre-backs are the best way to go about it. And, you know, that shows you, even, you know, when you look across, like last season, Pedro Porro, for example, was incredibly well-owned in the FPL community because he was regularly picking up those attacking returns in a very attacking Spurs side. And obviously Spurs weren't keeping clean sheets. This season, it's been Van de Ven who's been the most owned Spurs defender, well, actually player in general, all season. Why is that? Well, because he's more likely to pick up the defensive contribution points, and actually he hasn't picked up that many, and Spurs' defence has been terrible. So, but had they been better defensively, he would have been a far better own this season than Porro would have.
Yeah, it does feel like the whole way we talk about defenders has completely changed. Midfielders then, I think we've already mentioned it, with the premiums have been so tricky. But for me, like, when I think of midfielders in fantasy, it's just it's Bruno, isn't it? And it's Bruno Fernandes. And thank goodness Michael Carrick came in because, he was still picking up points under Ruben Amorim. But the fact that he's now so much more advanced, he's literally, Jules, got everything we need from a midfielder in terms of, he's talismanic for his team. He's on all set pieces.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I don't really know what more I can add.
No, you're right. And because he didn't start the season so well and was not owned so much, if you bought at the right time, I think the price was also decent for a player like him. And with all the points that he got us since, to be fair, his current form, you know, when you look at the form on the website or on the app, is 11. Like, there's no, I think the next one, you know, is 7 or something in the league. It's just ridiculous, the form that he's been showing for the last 5 games or so. Good for him. If you don't have him, you have to bring him in now for the end of the season, because United are obviously fighting for a top 5 finish. Would be incredible for them to go into the Champions League next season. So they will have to perform, and for them to perform, Bruno will have to be good. So if you don't have Bruno just yet, it's the time now to have him. Shout out to Semenyo, who in two different teams has also been incredible, 174 points, which I think is really good. And I think you mentioned him, Kels, too. For me, Harry Wilson is such an FPL like kind of a season special in the sense that if you brought him at the right time, if you saw that his form was getting better and better and better, and you brought him again at the right time, then he rewarded you with a lot of points. So, you know, every season we have those guys like Harry Wilson that you would have never brought in your team at the start of the season. But once he picked form and you brought him in, you were very happy.
Yeah. And also it's nice, isn't it, Winnie, because he's so cheap. Like a lot of people will have benefited early on. I'm not saying it wasn't great FPL planning, but a lot of managers will have just gone, oh, he's only 5 point. I think he started the season. Did you start at 5.5, Sam? Yeah, because I bought him at 5.6. And you just, as a fifth midfielder, he could just kind of fill that spot. But also, I think what's really interesting is the midfielder spots have been so kind of precious this season. That's where so much of our value has come from. I think that really shows just how well he has performed for a midfielder that started the season at 5.5 to be in our top five midfielders in the entire game, pretty much, in terms of owning over the season.
Yeah, it's mad. And actually, when you look at the top 10 for midfielders, obviously Bruno and Semenyo lead the way, and we, Jules rightly waxed lyrical about both of them because they're great. After that, it's Declan Rice, who again is incredible value for money.
Yeah.
And then after that, Harry Wilson, James Garner, Morgan Rogers is in there, Elliot Anderson, yeah. Casemiro, Bruno Guimaraes. Like, these prices are mad because we're talking about, like, obviously Harry Wilson now is 6.1, but Garner's 5.2, Anderson's 5.5 now, Casemiro 5.7. Like, if you'd have built your team, and in pre-season, we would never have said, right, build a team that's just got Bruno and Semenyo. Oh, and then add Harry Wilson, James Garner and Elliot Anderson to it and you'll be set. Like, but had you done that in pre-season? And I think that shows how much of an impact defensive contributions has made, because
absolutely,
Elliot Anderson is just an unreal pick, because every week you're getting four at least from him. Plus he's added some attacking returns to his game recently. Plus he gets the bonus points because Forest haven't been scoring that many goals. So obviously if they keep a clean sheet and he picks up the defensive contributions, he looks fantastic. So these players they've changed the way we think about the game. They've altered kind of the makeup of our teams. And that's why you get people going, oh, my bench has got 28 points on it this week. Well, why is that? Well, because you've got a midfield that can be so successful because of how cheap they are, that you can have all of these players comfortably. You could comfortably have the top five scoring midfielders in the game and still have Haaland and still have a couple of premium defenders and probably have money in the bank as well. And when you look at it in that way, that's just madness. And that's something that we've never had in FPL before. So I'm kind of intrigued already to see what they do with these players for next season. Like, do we see the defensive contribution monsters like Elliot Anderson getting a price rise next season rather than coming into the game at 5.5 or 5? Because actually at that moment, they're really worth way more to us than that in FPL.
It does feel like while we've been kind of expressing our disappointment in premium midfielders throughout this podcast, one that we've been particularly disappointed with, I'm sure, is Mohamed Salah. It just does feel like at this point, given the news this week, he's going to be leaving. Just a word on, yeah. It might not have been this campaign, Jules, but what a player, but also what a brilliant asset for us to have had in FPL. We've had some great times with him, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, king of the FPL, I think, or king of FPL, I don't know how you say it, probably forever. The ninth season that he's given us, I don't think any, apart from this current one year where he's been off it a little bit. But before that, probably the greatest player we've ever had in the game, to be fair, and that we will always have in the game. You could, look at Harry Kane maybe, and Haaland if he stays for another 5 years or so. But what Salah gave you in terms of goals and assists and bonus points and everything, he still has the record, Sam. What, 303 points?
I was going to say, would you like some Salah stats? Because I've got some. So Salah, overall, he's registered 2,216 FPL points in his career at Liverpool, and a few actually that came from his time at Chelsea. 191 goals, 104 assists, 232 bonus points, 87 double-digit hauls. And his best returns, sorry about this one, Kels, but the best returns, 129 points against Watford back in 1718.
Basically, every player that's had big returns in FPL was won Watford in the Premier League against them. It's fine.
And he also got 29 points against Everton and Bournemouth in double game week 24, but the Watford one was obviously in its own game week. And then he did it again with 28 points against Leeds and Norwich in a double game week. His favourite opponent in the Premier League, Manchester United. He's registered 136 points in 16 matches against them, which averages 8.5 points per match, 13 goals, 6 assists, 14 bonus points, and 4 double-digit hauls. he is an FPL legend.
Not bad, not bad. I'd love to bring him back in for his final few game weeks and just to relive a little bit of that. Come on, Mo, give us a big goodbye. You know you want to. Forwards then. I don't know, forwards for me are the position that I've found the trickiest this season. Whilst midfield has been great and we found some real value in, but it stems from Haaland all the way down, Jules. Like, it's just been hard to have the right forwards, unless maybe you've had Thiago at the right points, I guess.
Yeah, and again, at the right point too, because he'd had periods where he was not scoring, but he's probably, if you want a kind of surprise of the season, maybe the ones at the start of the season where we would not have thought he would be there, second top goal scorer in the league. It's surely him. He's third behind Haaland, obviously, and João Pedro, who low-key, in a way, is having a very good season for us in FPL. And again, I know it's been a bit streaky, but like I said earlier, in my good moments of the season, if you brought him in like me at the right time in the second half of the season, he's been very good for you. Really outstanding at times. So, but you're right, it's been tough. If you went for Calvert-Lewin at the time where he was on fire, remember he had all those games in a row with a goal, then that was great, but he's gone off a little bit now. And I think a lot of them have had good moments and then gone off again. There was the lack of consistency for strikers outside of, but even with Haaland that we mentioned before, even Haaland, João Pedro and Thiago, who are the three top strikers with the most points in the game forwards, it's been very inconsistent for them, which is a problem for us because there's nothing more than liking consistency in the game.
I'm also wondering if the whole playing three up front is kind of gone for a bit. Sam, Defcon probably playing its part in that.
Yeah, because actually, you know, they rarely pick up the defensive contributions. Although I was delighted to see Thiago get them in the blank game week, because if you aren't going to get an attack in return, at least bring me some defensive contribution points. But yeah, because the forwards generally, Jarrod Bowen, you are the exception to this, don't pick up the defensive contribution points, it does make them less attractive, particularly when, as we've talked about with the midfielders, you've got so many cheap, brilliant midfielders in their game that you want to play all five of them, which basically then means you can only play your two forwards. And we have had, over the course of the season, the likes of Creepy Jr. and Mane, who have come in and been able to be playable off your bench if you need them, if somebody goes missing across the rest of the game week, but that, you know, aren't breaking the bank or costing you a fortune. And I think that's been the issue, isn't it? Is that historically, we've all been kind of, I think over the last few seasons, it's been like, well, you have Haaland and then you pick somebody else, but you're pretty static with the forwards. You haven't really made that many changes. Whereas this season, it does feel like you've had to move around with the forwards and try and catch them at the right moments during the course of the campaign, because João Pedro is probably the exception. He's been more consistent than most of the others, but Ekitike's points have come in waves this season. Thiago's points have come in waves this season. Jarrod Bowen's have come in waves this season. Same with Jokeres. Like the rest of them, they've all felt like you had to get on and off at the right moments. And I think that's been part of my problem, is that I missed Thiago's two big hauls, getting off of him and looking at Jarrod Bowen, because he had difficult fixtures coming up. And I'd kind of tried to play the fixtures with the forwards a little bit and target in on the defences that had been weaker this season. But that hasn't necessarily worked out. And so, I do think the forwards heading into the last couple of weeks of the season, like, I'm at a point now where I need to decide, my forward line is probably the bit that I need to decide on most. Like, the midfield I'm relatively happy with, that can probably stay fairly static between now and the end of the campaign. But the forward line, I feel like that's where my transfers will be over the coming weeks, just trying to hit the form of players as they do well and end the season.
It's really tough, isn't it? Because I'm now looking at the forwards and I'm like, who are the best forwards to kind of have? Because even like João Pedro, I'm now a bit like, I mean, since I've put him in, he's been an absolute disaster. They've got City next. It's gonna be tough, I think, to pick them out. But we'll do that on next week's show, because next week, this was more of a reflective look back. But as I mentioned, because we're in a bit of the stop-start period, what's very much in the stop period of the Premier League season at the moment, it gives us more time to dissect these things. So next week, we'll be looking ahead. And then the following week will be, finally, the game week 31. It's 31, isn't it? Yeah, 31. Was it 32?
32.
Oh, see, exactly. I don't even know what week it is now. It feels like I've been on 31 forever.
You need to go back to the pool.
Yeah. In fact, that's what I'm going to do now. Let's just end this podcast. See you next week, guys. Have a good international break. Sam, I hope you have a lovely lunch with the Spurs legends.
Thank you.